Chapter 31. Oh, please, ma'am, tis this Larry about Mr. Henchard. A woman has proved that, before he became a gentleman, he sold his wife for 5 guineas in a booth at a fair. In all the accounts which Henchard had given her of the separation from his wife Susan for so many years, of his belief in her death, and so on, he had never clearly explained the actual and immediate cause of that separation. The story she now heard for the first time. A gradual misery overspread Lucetta's face as she dwelt upon the promise wrung from her the night before. At bottom, then, Henchard was this. How terrible a contingency for a woman who should commit herself to his care. During the day she went out to the ring, and to other places, not coming until nearly dusk. As soon as she saw Elizabeth Jane after her return indoors, she told her that as he had resolved to go away from home to the seaside for a few days to Port Bredy, Casterbridge was so gloomy. Elizabeth, seeing that she looked wan and disturbed, encouraged her in the idea, thinking a change would afford her relief. She could not help suspecting that the gloom which seemed to have come over Casterbridge in Lucetta's eyes might be partially owing to the fact that Farfrae was away from home. Elizabeth saw her friend depart for Port Bredy, and took charge of High Plus Hall till her return. After 2 or 3 days of solitude and incessant rain, Henchard called at the house. He seemed disappointed to hear of Lucetta's absence, and though he nodded with outward indifference, he went away handling his beard with a nettled mien. The next day he called again. "Has she come now?" he asked. "Yes. She returned this morning," replied his stepdaughter. "But she is not indoors. As he has gone for a walk along the turnpike road to Port Bredy. She will be home by dusk." After a few words, which only served to reveal his restless impatience, he left the house again. 29. At this hour Lucetta was bounding along the road to Port Bredy just as Elizabeth had announced. That as he had chosen for her afternoon walk the road along which as he had returned to Casterbridge 3 hours earlier in a carriage was curious, if anything should be called curious in concatenations of phenomena wherein each is known to have its accounting cause. It was the day of the chief market Saturday and Farfrae for once had been missed from his corn stand in the dealer's room. Nevertheless, it was known that he would be home that night or Sunday, as Casterbridge expressed it. Lucetta, in continuing her walk, had at length reached the end of the rank trees which bordered the highway in this and other directions out of the town. This end marked a mile, and here she stopped. The spot was a vale between two gentle acclivities, and the road, still adhering to its Roman foundation, stretched onward straight as a surveyor's line till lost to sight on the most distant ridge. There was neither hedge nor tree in the prospect now, the road clinging to the stubby expanse of corn land like a strip to an undulating garment. Nearer was a barn, the single building of any kind within her horizon. She strained her eyes up the lessening road, but nothing appeared thereon, not so much as a speck. She sighed one word, "Arnold," and turned her face to the town for retreat. Here the case was different. A single figure was approaching her Elizabeth Jane's. Lucetta, in spite of her loneliness, seemed a little vexed. Elizabeth's face, as soon as she recognized her friend, shaped itself into affectionate lines, while yet beyond speaking distance. "Suddenly thought I would come and meet you," she said, smiling. Lucetta's reply was taken from her lips by an unexpected diversion. A byroad on her right hand descended from the fields into the highway at the point where she stood, and down the track a bull was rambling uncertainly towards her and Elizabeth, who, facing the other way, did not observe him. In the latter quarter of each year cattle were at once the mainstay, and the terror of families about Casterbridge and its neighborhood, where breeding was carried on with abrahamic success. The head of stock driven into and out of the town at this season, to be sold by the local auctioneer, was very large, and all these horned beasts, in traveling to and fro, sent women and children to shelter as nothing else could do. In the main the animals would have walked along quietly enough, But the Casterbridge tradition was that to drive stock it was indispensable that hideous cries, coupled with Yahoo antics and gestures, should be used. Large sticks flourished, stray dogs called in, and in general everything done that was likely to infuriate the viciously disposed and terrify the mild. Nothing was commoner than for a householder on going out of his parlor to find his hall or passage full of little children, nursemaids, aged women, or a ladies' school, who apologized for their presence by saying, "A bull passing down street from the sale." Lucetta and Elizabeth regarded the animal in doubt, he meanwhile drawing vaguely towards them. It was a large specimen of the breed, in color rich dun, though disfigured at present by splotches of mud about his seamy sides. His horns were thick, and tipped with brass, his two nostrils like the Thames Tunnel as seen in the perspective toys of yore. Between them, through the gristle of his nose, was a stout copper ring, welded on, and irremovable as Girth's collar of brass. To the ring was attached an ash staff about a yard long, which the bull with the motions of his head flung about like a flail. It was not till they observed this dangling stick that the young women were really alarmed, for it revealed to them that the bull was an old one, too savage to be driven, which had in some way escaped, the staff being the means by which the drover controlled him and kept his horns at arm's length. They looked round for some shelter or hiding place, and thought of the barn hard by. As long as they had kept their eyes on the bull, he had shown some deference in his manner of approach. But no sooner did they turn their backs to seek the barn than he tossed his head, and decided to thoroughly terrify them. This caused the two helpless girls to run wildly, whereupon the bull advanced in a deliberate charge. The barn stood behind a green slimy pond, and it was close save as to one of the usual pair of doors facing them, which had been propped open by a hurdle stick, and for this opening they made. The interior had been cleared by a recent bout of threshing except at one end, where there was a stack of dry clover. Elizabeth Jane took in the situation. "He must climb up there," she said. But before they had even approached it, they heard the bull scampering through the pond without, and in a second he dashed into the barn, knocking down the hurdle stake in passing. The heavy door slammed behind him, and all three were imprisoned in the barn together. The mistaken creature saw them, and stalked towards the end of the barn into which they had fled. The girls doubled so adroitly that their pursuer was against the wall when the fugitives were already halfway to the other end. By the time that his length would allow him to turn and follow them thither, they had crossed over. Thus the pursuit went on, the hot air from his nostrils blowing over them like a sirocco, and not a moment being attainable by Elizabeth or Lucetta in which to open the door. What might have happened had their situation continued cannot be said. But in a few moments a rattling of the door distracted their adversary's attention, and a man appeared. He ran forward towards the leading staff, seized it, and wrenched the animal's head, as if he would snap it off. The wrench was in reality so violent that the thick neck seemed to have lost its stiffness, and to become half paralyzed, whilst the nose dropped blood. The premeditated human contrivance of the nose ring was too cunning for impulsive brute force, and the creature flinched. The man was seen in the partial gloom to be large-framed and unhesitating. He led the bull to the door, and the light revealed Henchard. He made the bull fast without, and re-entered to the succor of Lucetta, for he had not perceived Elizabeth, who had climbed onto the clover heap. Lucetta was hysterical, and Henchard took her in his arms, and carried her to the door. "You have saved me," she cried, as soon as she could speak. "I have returned your kindness," he responded tenderly. "You once saved me." "How comes it to be you?" she asked, not heeding his reply. "I came out here to look for you. I have been wanting to tell you something these 2 or 3 days, but you have been away, and I could not. Perhaps you cannot talk now?" "Oh no. Where is Elizabeth?" "Here am I," cried the missing one cheerfully, and without waiting for the latter to be placed, she slid down the face of the clover stack to the floor. Henchard supporting Lucetta on one side, and Elizabeth Jane on the other, they went slowly along the rising road. They had reached the top, and were descending again when Lucetta, now much recovered, recollected that as he had dropped her muff in the barn. "I'll run back," said Elizabeth Jane. "Don't mind it at all, as I am not tired as you are." She thereupon hastened down again to the barn, the others pursuing their way. Elizabeth soon found the muff, such an article being by no means small at that time. Coming out, she paused to look for a moment at the bull, now rather to be pitied with his bleeding nose, having perhaps rather intended a practical joke than a murder. Henchard had secured him by jamming the staff into the hinge of the barn door and wedging it there with a stake. At length she turned to hasten onward after her contemplation, when she saw a green and black gig approaching from the contrary direction, the vehicle being driven by Farfrae. His presence here seemed to explain Lucetta's walk that way. Donald saw her, drew up, and was hastily made acquainted with what had occurred. At Elizabeth Jane mentioning how greatly Lucetta had been jeopardized, he exhibited an agitation different in kind no less than in intensity from any as he had seen in him before. He became so absorbed in the circumstance that he scarcely had sufficient knowledge of what he was doing to think of helping her up beside him. "As he has gone on with Mr. Henchard, you say?" he inquired at last. "Yes. He is taking her home. They are almost there by this time." "And you are sure she can get home?" Elizabeth Jane was quite sure. "Your stepfather saved her?" "Entirely." Farfrae checked his horse's pace. She guessed why. He was thinking that it would be best not to intrude on the other two just now. Henchard had saved Lucetta, and to provoke a possible exhibition of her deeper affection for himself was as ungenerous as it was unwise. The immediate subject of their talk, being exhausted, she felt more embarrassed at sitting thus beside her past lover, but soon the two figures of the others were visible at the entrance to the town. The face of the woman was frequently turned back, but Farfrae did not whip on the horse. When he reached the town walls, Henchard and his companion had disappeared down the street. Farfrae set down Elizabeth Jane on her expressing a particular wish to alight there, and drove round to the stables at the back of his lodgings. On this account he entered the house through his garden, and going up to his apartments, found them in a particularly disturbed state, his boxes being hauled out upon the landing, and his bookcase standing in three pieces. These phenomena, however, seemed to cause him not the least surprise. "And will everything be sent up?" he said to the mistress of the house, who was superintending. "I am afraid not before 8, sir," said she. "Oozie, we wasn't aware till this morning that you were going to move, or we could have been forwarder." "Oh well, never mind, never mind," said Farfrae cheerily. 8 o'clock will do well enough, if it be not later. Now, don't ye be standing here talking, or it will be 12, I doubt." Thus speaking he went out by the front door, and up the street. During this interval Henchard and Lucetta had had experiences of a different kind. After Elizabeth's departure for the muff, the corn merchant opened himself frankly, holding her hand within his arm, though she would fain have withdrawn it. "Dear Lucetta, I have been very, very anxious to see you these 2 or 3 days," he said, "ever since I saw you last. I have thought over the way I got your promise that night. You said to me, if I were a man I should not insist. ... that cut me deep. I felt that there was some truth in it. I don't want to make you wretched, and to marry me just now would do that as nothing else could. It is but too plain. Therefore I agree to an indefinite engagement, to put off all thought of marriage for a year or two. But can I do nothing of a different kind?" said Lucetta. "I'm full of gratitude to you, you have saved my life. And your care of me is like coals of fire on my head. I am a moneyed person now. Surely I can do something in return for your goodness, something practical?" Henchard remained in thought. he had evidently not expected. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.